The following programming is sponsored by PhillyLabor.com. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Legal Show on WWDB Talk 860, sponsored by BridgeMed Legal. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Larry Schreiber in the house. We have Andrew Reuter, partner, Palm Hockey. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me as well.
It's a pleasure. And Valerie Pettacombe, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you for having
me. Spivak and Spivak in the house. And of course, we have Tyler, our producer. Lots to talk about. First, I'm going to go around the horn a little bit and you know, ask everybody to, you know, introduce themselves and tell a little bit about the firm. And about what you guys do. Valerie, if you would, a little bit about, you know, what you do and what firm you're with.
So I'm with the law firm of Spivak and Spivak. We do personal injury, slip and fall, motor vehicle accidents, all kinds of premises liability, dog bites, workers' compensation.
Okay. And Andrew Reuter, if you will.
Sure. So I'm with Poundley Hockey. We primarily focus on workers' comp, but all types of disability benefits as well, from Social Security to short-term, long-term disability, as well as some VA benefits and any type of disability benefit for the most part.
And Larry Schreiber, if you would.
BridgeMed Legal. We have we are a marketing company for doctors, and we work with attorneys. We have about 320 offices now in 7 states that we represent.
And so having said that, I'd like to have a little bit of fun before as we start, a little bit of sports and anybody baseball fans here at all? Okay.
Yep.
Well, are you a baseball fan?
Of course.
Okay, so I'm going to the Phillies game today, right? Got a lot going on there and we're real excited about it. But I'd like to start off a little basketball. And, you know, we see what's going on. You know, Caitlin Clark is in the WNBA, and she's getting roughed up a little bit, you know, to say the least. But I just want to start off by saying I think this is just a welcome to the WNBA thing. And I think, you know, she's playing well and all. And she was a big star, and they're touching her, you know, like, you know, they're you know, some people are talking about, you know, it's going over the line. And it probably is to an extent. But I don't see it going on. You know, I don't see this thing entering into her second year. I think she's going to have a great career. And I think that they're just, you know, kind of letting her know that you're in the pros now. And I mean, believe me, all kinds of comments. I mean, social media is blowing up because of it. Any thoughts on that, Andrew?
Well, I mean, given her stardom and just her name that she created in college, she definitely has a target on her back.
Definitely.
There was an incident in the game just the other night where they won and she got thrown to the ground. And then later on, they came back and gave a flagrant foul. So I think the refs might end up getting a little more involved and making sure it gets cleaned up.
You know, I think that is definitely a target there. But I do think, like you said, I think this is going to take its course and, you know, welcome to the league rookie type of thing. I don't see this. If it went any farther than the rookie year, then I think it would be a problem. Like, in other words, at that point, because she is so popular, she's bringing people into this
it's
game.
It's crazy, I know.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, who didn't watch that her first game? Like, everybody was like, I gotta see that, you know? I mean, you know, it's Valerie, did you watch a lot of women's basketball? I did not. Now I am.
I have to agree. Same.
Yeah,
it's, Angela Reese. I mean, they're all, it's, you know, well, Dawn Staley, she's amazing.
Oh, my
Philadelphia.
God.
And I mean, so I follow a little bit being a basketball like a basketball fan, but blew up immensely.
Yeah. So, I mean, people can say, you know, I see some of the, what are your thoughts, Larry?
See, I personally think that, you're correct. I think it's a welcome to the WNBA. But what I really think is going to happen is what Andrew said. I think that the officiating is going to have to slap them down because I think they're taking runs at her early to test her chin, number one. Mm-hmm. But I also think that she's been a firebrand because she's fiery. And I think that she people are – I think it's like a you either love her or you can't stand her.
Right.
And I think that some of the people are taking a shot. I think that some of the professionals are, I think that they are a little offended that the WNBA has really, I don't want to say caught fire, but has become much more noticeable, much more marketable because of her, as well as Angel Reese.
Angel Reese, yeah.
Well, so I personally think that they should be thanking, you know, the two of them.
I think that they will eventually. But I think right now it's a welcome to the WNBA situation. And, you know, you do have, you know, a lot of the NBA stars are jumping in. And the one guy said, it was very interesting, where's her teammates during all this, right? Like, why aren't they jumping in? So it's a definite interesting, it's a big, obviously a big story. I'm excited now that, you know, that there's, people are starting to know people, you know, like, you know who the women are. The salaries are, like, what, the average salary is like what?
70,000?
75 or?
70, yeah, it's low.
It's low. I mean, so hopefully that'll increase. I mean, look, I am an equal rights guy, equality, 150,000%. But when, you know, the receipts are the receipts. So as these things build up, the salaries will go up. You know, I mean, you certainly have a lot of hype. And so we'll see what happens there. And you know, we're going to be revisiting it on various shows. But I think that next year, this will be a thing of the past. You know, I do think that the refs will jump in. But if there was as much aggression next year, I'd be like, you know, I'd have to, you know, if I was the owner, you know, the commissioner of that league, I'd have to sit everybody down and go, yo, guys, you know, we gotta, you know, move on from this situation, or it's going to look a little thuggy, you know, with people beating, you know, hitting their heart. But I don't see that.
When
at
did
all.
The playoffs start?
I don't know.
Because I personally think that it's going to get squashed for the next week or two. I think that it has been brought to the forefront, so I think the league knows that it's an ugliness that they want to kind of squash.
No question.
Which means I think that they're going to talk to the refs. I think the refs are going to handle it accordingly.
So baseball, right, Andrew? You're a baseball guy.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and what are you thinking about the Phils?
It's a very pleasant surprise to be this hot this early. Hopefully there's not as much cheering for players not on our team this afternoon like there was yesterday, but yeah. We'll see what happens there.
So, I'll tell you though, even I got...
Reese is loved.
Well, here's the funny thing about that. Okay, nobody was harder on him than I was, but I was at that game when he hit the home run and threw it down.
So was I. That was incredible.
That is when the Loud House started, bro.
Yeah.
Like, was that, and what was around that, okay, what was around that was that, who was the pitcher? Strider, right? So Strider, we couldn't touch him. Like, we was only the second inning, but damn. And then, who was it that, Stott, who made him go through 12 pitches or something like that. I think it was Stott. And next thing you know, he hits that, now, of course, in the same game, remember, he blew the first, the play at first. But I think that play is, he's done a good job and all that. But that play in particular was a massive boost. Like,
I can still close my eyes and see and hear the entire Phillies crowd doing the Braves chant that entire game. Gives you the chills. It was incredible.
It was incredible, man. Val, you a baseball person?
Love baseball. Happy that Ranger just had a left hand contusion and nothing more serious. So I'm following them closely. They're hot.
Well, it's funny because my wife is an absolute, like, she's such a fan that if we lose 8-1, she's watching the post game show. Right? I mean, you know, and I've loved baseball my whole life, but if it's 9-1, if it's 8-1 in the seventh, I'm possibly at my computer working because I can't, you know, I don't have the patience that I used to. I don't mean to watch. I'm talking about, to kind of lose it. Like, in other words, like, you know, it's very difficult to watch Soto, to watch Dominguez. Okay, guys that throw 100 miles an hour that cannot get through an inning. You know, you got to wonder. Soto does okay when he's not trying to throw 100 miles an hour. When he controls it, and but this is, you know, it's baseball's a marathon and a sprint, but it's a beautiful thing to watch.
What do you do with Taiwan Walker?
It's very, very, well, he's making $72 million.
Wow.
which is Larry Schreiber type of money. I mean,
if I had your deep pockets.
Yeah, no, if I just take off for lunch today, I could balance the budget, right? But what do you do with him? You know, it's weird because he, you know, he's been in the big leagues since he's 21. He's 10 years in. He's got a big contract, and you can see who's the pitcher we, you know, we had
Turnbull.
He struggles as a reliever. You know, like that's just not his mindset. He's a good starter. He was one of the top starters in the league when he got pulled. So what do I think? It's a problem. And some may say it's a good problem to have, but it's still a tough one. What would you do? Trade him.
If you can get rid of him.
Pick up half the salary.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have to. No one would take him
otherwise. Nobody's going to eat that salary.
Yeah.
No question. That's. But it is. So we're going to the game today, and we'll see what happens. You know, I'm pulling, obviously, you know, that these guys pick it up. But I think, you know, we're going to make some moves. How about the kid last night, Dahl? Mother of God. Now, he was an all-star first baseman. I mean, he's got one good year in, but he's, you know, so struggling. I never seen anybody so happy. The thing about that team is, and it was that way last year and the year before, is that, you know how after the game they dump the water on, on the guy getting the interview, they always, you know, if you're watching and you got Stott and you got Marsh and Boehm coming up and they dump water on their heads. There's a youthful type, and they even do it to Harper, and Harper just takes it, you know, like, because I think he knows that that's part of the culture, because he's one of the most serious dudes around. Sometimes I'm going, oh, man, mm-hmm. You know, they're going to dump that water on his head. He's just going to kill somebody. But it's a great atmosphere. The kid Dahl comes in, he's smiling like the world is, you know, his oyster. So pretty cool stuff, and we'll see what happens. But it's a marathon and a sprint.
It's the perfect mix of highly talented vets and the young kids now coming into their
own. Well, it's funny you should say that because very rarely, do you get to see three players, maybe four if you count Suarez, all develop at the same time. Boehm, Stott, Marsh, and what you call it, Suarez. Like these guys... You know, they're becoming all-star players right in front of our face, and it's a pretty cool thing.
I'll tell you what, I don't mean to interrupt, but what I love the most about this team is how they are as a team, they support each other, how they embrace each other. It's a culture they're building, and I got to tell you something, it's Harper, because at the end of the day, when Harper came here, that's when things changed.
Yeah.
He brought other talent. But they also bought into the family type of philosophy.
Look, Schwarber, Harper, Realmuto, these veterans, okay, and the center fielder, okay, Rojas. Okay, now, he makes some bonehead plays, and they're in the big league, okay? They're in the big leagues. You can't, what are you going to do, have fielding practice? He's in the big leagues, okay? Topper sat him, okay? But, man, when he gets on base, he is like...
He doesn't stop.
Well, he's like a world-class sprinter. Like, he changes the game. So it's a pretty cool thing, and it's exciting. I can tell you this. My favorite time of year, because we're going into football now, not sure if you noticed, but Larry is not a football fan. He does not like football. And I know Sam and Jerry are not big football fans either.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so the Super Bowl rang aside what do you think of the Eagles
God. I think I'm excited for the draft, the offseason they had, I think was phenomenal. I think they get an A+. I think they shored up the secondary. I'm excited to see
new coordinators.
By the way, that's spot on. That was the downfall of the team last year.
Yeah.
Both coordinators were horrible.
And both coordinators were rookies. So it was one of the oddest, was the Eagles season, one of the craziest seasons ever, 10-1. And I was getting in arguments. I got in argument with my hairstylist. I mean, she's my wife's best friend. So she's going, what are winning? I'm like, man, Judy, they're winning. They're either the greatest team in the history of sports that don't have to show up until the fourth quarter, or we got problems. And well,
the latter.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. So it'll be cool to It would be great if we had one of those eras where everybody was good, like back in the early 80s. Or something. Not so stuff.
Do you think that Jason Kelce's absence is going to make a difference?
That's a really interesting question.
I'm obsessed with health.
Leadership-wise, as much.
What do you think?
I mean, it has to. You can't have a guy of that caliber just leave and everything.
He was a quarterback. Yeah. He was a quarterback for the offensive line.
You know what's interesting about that? The first thing, I think that's a really interesting question. And what it gets into is measurables. You have these guys, okay? You have these guys, these scouts. And look, let's look at Jason Kelce's measurables. 6'2½", 285, center. Now he can run, but he's a sixth-round draft choice, man. He's undersized, and, you want the 6'4", 320, 310. Guess what? He's a great example of measurables don't work. I mean, sometimes they have to factor in, but you just can't. You would sit there and go, you know what? Let's get a bigger, you're not going to get a faster guy, but you're going to get a center. Do I think it's going to hurt? Oh, yeah. Because you can't measure everything that he brought to that table. Now, he brought Cam Jurgens in himself.
Yes.
So I think that, and you got other veterans there. And I think, but it can't do anything but hurt. But he seems like the kind of guy that's going to be on the phone with his boys, you got to pick it up. I mean, but yeah, I think it's going to be, I think it's got to impact them. It's going to be weird for all of them. So, but, when you think about, we're going to get into the law, but you talk about Jason Kelce, the great Philadelphia, I'm going to roll around on the horn for this one. So top five, Philadelphia's most loved top five. You can go six if you have to. Jump in there, Andrew.
Iverson, Dawkins.
Oh, yeah.
Chase Utley.
Don't forget Kelce.
Right. We have to throw Kelce in there.
Dr. J.
We'd almost have to do this by errors.
Exactly. I think it's hard.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I don't want to ask on air, but what year did you graduate high school?
2003.
Okay. You know what? Me and you just missed each other by 21 years. I was taller than you back in 77. Wait a minute. You weren't born back in 77.
Nope.
Was not.
So wait a minute. 70. So you graduated in 2003. You're my son's age. You're 38.
Correct.
Okay. So, Val, you want to throw in there?
By errors or?
I mean, whatever you think. I'm going to name them anyway. Yeah, I don't want to go back to Van Brocklin. But, you can take it back to the Broad Street Bullies. You're a South Philly girl.
I mean, I love Embiid.
Okay.
I'm a Sixers girl. Jimmy Rollins was great. Chase Utley.
How about Kelce?
Love.
Okay. Larry.
So, I mean, you guys mentioned basically everybody I would have mentioned. Brian Westbrook, I would have thrown in there. I would have thrown in, I think, Trotter. I think Trotter, even though he was an excellent player, but he's not a Hall of Famer, but I think him and Dawkins basically encapsulated the heart of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two. I think Dawkins is my favorite athlete of all time.
Well, so I'm going to jump in there. I'm going to cross some ears for you. You can Google this, guys. Obviously, Bobby Clark and Bernie Parent. Okay. That goes way back.
Okay. Who? I'm kidding.
You're going to have to Google those guys. Dr. J, obviously, Iverson. And Iverson, the thing about Iverson was he left it all on the court, bro. I mean, there was
a warrior.
Oh, my God. So I'd say Dr. J, Iverson. I mean, Moses Malone. He was only in Philly
for a few years.
He sure did take us to a championship. And then let's go to the Eagles, okay? I want to ask everybody, if you're on a jury, okay, no matter what the defendant did, and Nick Foles is the one of the witnesses. Oh my God! And by the way, he just was a witness for Maragos, when he was suing and he won. Okay, no matter what, if Nick Foles is on there and he's supporting, you know what? I think this guy's completely, faking everything. He committed the crime. He did this, but Nick Foles just you know gave him the thumbs up. I'm going with Nick Foles. But I'm going to go with Brian Dawkins. I'm gonna go with Jason Kelce, and I'll throw in Nick Foles, Mike Schmidt.
I was gonna say Mike.
Yeah, Mike Schmidt.
Andrew Toney.
Strangler. You could say that, but Dr. J. I mean, I'm just
Wilt
saying.
Chamberlain. The
yeah,
best.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a stat on him. He averaged 40 points a game. Something crazy. Like he did it like 40 times. No one's the 400 times. Closest guy is like 23. Like. You know, that's a part of the eras, right? Like, in other words, you can't really, but he would certainly, you know, be dominant today, no question. One of my favorite quotes from Roland de la Law, but they asked Ty Cobb, I saw this in, I don't know if you saw the Ty Cobb movie, but the reporter, he was real cantankerous. Everybody hated Ty Cobb, right? He's the guy who Pete Rose, he had 4,000 hits, but everybody hated him. Cause he was real, like he would slide in a second and spike him and all. So the reporter says to him, he's an old timer. They're interviewing him before he dies and all. And he's sitting there. I think they're in his bedroom when he's at his bed. And the reporter says to him, "Well, Ty, how do you think you do against the players, of today, the pitchers of today? How do you think you do?" And he goes, "I probably hit about 270, 272." And he said, "Ty, you're a lifetime 370 hitter. I don't understand." And Ty looks at him and goes, "I'm 72 years old."
That's great.
That is pretty good.
Yeah, he went over the he went through those eras. Let's talk a little kind of third party type stuff. So somebody gets injured on the job, okay, and. Let's kind of, in a sense, involve everybody at the table. So somebody gets injured at the job, okay, and there could be a third party case. They're not sure, but the fact is that the worker's just coming in, and let's just say, for lack of a better term, Val, you guys got the PI, Andrew, you got the work comp. They come to you. You send them the val, but talk about the process of that work injury, and investigating and trying to investigate to see if there is a third party case. How does that work?
Sure. So workers' comp, just in general, is so limited. It's limited to wage loss and medical. A lot of people come in thinking there is emotional distress and pain and suffering, which you'll never get a penny for under workers' comp. So, we're constantly looking for other avenues that could potentially help that client, whether there was a motor vehicle accident involved in that injury, whether the slip and fall happened on a premises owned by someone other than the employer, or they were using, a piece of equipment that malfunctioned. If there's or anyone that's on, a large construction work site, there's always a high chance of a possible third party case there. So, it's all about vetting the client while you're talking to them during that initial intake. If there's even a chance of a third party case, we're always going to refer that out just to make sure we covered all the bases.
And how often is there typically, first thing people think is, and they don't really know, but the first thing is, I can't sue my employer. A lot of people will, they'll be like, I can't, but they may not even, they may say, like I've heard stories where it's a piece of equipment that, somebody gets hurt on it. And there are some cases I've heard that, if they weren't vetted properly, somebody, could have, missed out, on a negligence case. How often are there is there a third party element in a case that is a work comp case that may not be obvious?
Sure. So I think it's pretty high. I mean, I can't give you an exact percentage.
I need the exact percentage.
If you take an employer like Amazon, for example,
yeah,
the likelihood of there being a third-party case unless they work in the warehouse is extremely high because most of them are either a motor vehicle accident or they trip and fall running up to drop the package at a customer's home. Same thing with UPS. It really depends on the employer. A lot of times things get missed where the person believes the employer owns the building when in fact they're actually leasing it from someone else where there could be a third party component there.
So you get the call from Andrew, Val, and what's the first, you know, at that point, like, you know, we think there's a third party case. Okay. But let's roll a little bit. This individual, and it often happens before they walk into either one of your offices, they tried to handle it themselves. So it's not that the accident didn't happen yesterday. Maybe it happened 6 weeks ago. They didn't get their benefits, and now they're trying, you know, now all of a sudden they call Andrew, and Andrew says, guess what? It looks like there's a third party case. What do you do from day one? 6 months after, 6 weeks potentially after the accident.
I mean, it depends on the type of case. I would, you know, figure that out right away. If it's a motor vehicle, if it's a premises liability, my first thought would be, you know, you got to figure out who the owner is so you can send something that we call spoliation letters out. It's very important because if there's video footage, you don't know the retention time of the footage. And it's important if it's captured on video, it can, you know, make or break a case. And if they're, you know, you want to make sure you get the homeowners or the people responsible on notice so you can...
But this person has been... They were at work when they got hurt. So now it's even if they were driving, okay, somebody T-boned them and they tried to handle it themselves, which I've talked to some attorneys, and I like to educate the listener, right? In other words, you know, well, I'm not trying to scare the listener, but there have been, you know, I've talked to a couple people at your firms, and it's very low likelihood that you're able to represent yourself and be as successful. You get beat up on a constant basis. So when you get that call after 6 weeks, okay, and you're talking about that evidence, okay, how do you collect it when now you may have to go out to the job site and look at what are your thoughts there?
I become an investigator, figure out where they fell, get the deed, go out to the site if I have to. If it's a premises liability, if it's a car accident, get a police report right away, you know, figure out if there's insurance. That's the most important thing I do. As soon as I get a case, if it's a car accident and it's 6 weeks, whether it's 2 weeks or 6 weeks, I want to let the client know if there's applicable insurance. If they were driving their car, if there's in somebody else's car, if there's, you know, underinsured or uninsured motorists. So, you know, it's not something that a person should try to do. The listener should, you know, immediately call an attorney, even if they know an attorney like Pond and Lahaki's firm, Andy's firm, and they just do workers' comp to get to an attorney. And I always tell my clients, even if I don't do it, if I'm not, you know, I can get you to the right lawyers, like firms like his firms or other firms, no matter what. So it's very important to call a lawyer.
The medical part of it. Okay. I've heard, you know, so, you know, I'm going to say in the hundreds of conversations with Sam in regards to, you know, the misnomers. Now, this, you know, Val, you've done a lot of union work. We have mutual union friends that we know. And, of course, you guys have done a ton of union work. So we're not going to get into a collective bargaining agreement right now. When somebody gets injured and they just try to handle it themselves, they often get sent right to what we call a panel doctor. Now, it is vitally important, and we've had this conversation a thousand times, that if it is a union case, that the lawyer knows that the collective bargaining agreement. However, aside from that, let's just say in the collective bargaining agreement, there's nothing about a mandatory. This doesn't matter. A lot of people, first thing they do is go to their boss, and they end up at a situation where it's less than. In fact, it could be, you know. You could say it like, you know, you're on Mars. Like you walk into this office, you're used to, especially in South Philly, you grow up there, your doctor's your family doctor, that they've been in your house, they know everybody, right? So you're used to that. okay? Now, all of a sudden, you get injured, and you might even call that doctor. He says, look, that's not what I do, right before he, you know, right before he, you know, he says, you know, take your shirt off. whoa, keep the shirt on. That's not what I do, right? And then they go to one of those company doctors or whatever they're called, the panel doctors, and it's not anything like they're used to growing up. Talk about what we call about the panel doctor, Andrew, and then we'll get into, you know, your network of doctors who are advocates for the patients, because otherwise there'd be a real problem.
Sure. So I actually, within the last couple of years, wrote an article about this whole myth of the 90-day period where, you know, anytime someone gets hurt, they're not represented, they speak with the adjuster. The adjuster convinces them you must treat with our doctors for the first 90 days. The reason for that is they want to have total control over what those records say. They're in constant communication with the doctors because the individual signs an authorization early, which sort of gets rid of all the HIPAA hoops that they have to jump through. And they can literally speak with the doctors right before their next visit. I joke with clients all the time is you're going to go to a Concentra facility. You could walk in there with an arm detached from your body and they're going to tap you on the back and say, good luck at work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's beyond important that the first thing we do is always try to assist in making a medical referral for them, not only to a doctor who they can trust to get all the care that they need, but to make sure MRIs are ordered, they get to the right specialists. Otherwise, you're going to be treating at a clinic, rush back to work well before you're ever ready. And then the last thing on that is the actual law is this, and this is where everyone gets us confused. In Pennsylvania, you could treat with any doctor you want from day one. Okay, the 90-day period only applies to who is responsible to pay for those bills in the first 90 days. So if you signed a panel acknowledgement form at the time of hire, immediately after the work injury, and the carrier provided you with an actual panel list that gives you the opportunity to choose from that list who you want to see, then the bills for the first 90 days are not payable by workers' comp. 99.9% of the time, they fail to do one of those three things. And if they fail to do one of them, then you can treat with anyone you want from day one, and all of those bills are payable from the very start.
And even if you have a collective bargaining agreement, you can still get a second opinion. I mean, you know, like, for example, TW-234 workers, they have a collective bargaining, and it says that they have to go to their Concentra or panel. That doesn't mean you can't treat with somebody else during that particular process and get a second opinion, correct?
Sure. In fact, I'd recommend that because a lot of times we see when you treat just with the panel, they, from my standpoint, intentionally document your symptoms incorrectly. So if someone's having low back pain radiating down their legs, that fact is extremely important to be documented soon after the injury. But if they're just treating with the panel, a lot of that is omitted altogether.
Val, in your world, I've heard a number of people say no treatment, no case. Okay, in other words, you know, being on top of a client, maybe it was an auto accident, maybe they're badly injured, but they're depressed and they stop their treatment. What is that? You know, what are the consequences of something like that?
Heavily, especially if they're like full tort or limited tort, it's very important to treat the type of treatment. When there's a gap in treatment, it becomes much more challenging. There's ways we can help the client and advise them accordingly if they're, you know, injured, things happen. But when there's a gap, you know, are they self-treating? I always ask them, what type of self-treatment are you doing? You know, why weren't you at a doctor? Sometimes the individuals just, they are not sophisticated. They don't know how to get to a doctor. I encourage them to, you know, I help them, I assist them. As attorneys, we can assist our clients and help them, give them options, you know, where to treat.
Well, it's interesting, though, because, and Larry, we're going to talk about your network in a second, but fact of the matter is, I would not have, if you didn't have an attorney who understood the legal medical area, I don't know how a human being would actually find somebody who would actually treat them. Like, if there wasn't a network of individuals, a quality, now I'm not, you could bump into one. I'm not saying you can't, and maybe your family doctor might, but the fact of the matter is that you need individuals, and often there's a situation where there's maybe a claim petition. Larry, talk about your network and also talk about the fact that obviously it's a you know, not your average, you know, fall down and
good
broke
point,
I, you know, I broke my arm in my own house. It, you know, Larry ran me over on purpose. I mean, it's a totally different story.
So it's interesting. We deal with a ton of attorneys throughout the, not only just the Delaware Valley, but probably about 6-7 states.
None of
well.
Them as good as these two right
obviously,
here.
Of course, obviously.
How could that be?
So a lot of times you'll have a practice that specializes in the Philadelphia, you know, the counties, the, you know, in the Philadelphia area. And then a lot of times they'll get cases in areas like Williamsport or in certain parts of Pittsburgh or out west. And a lot of the Philadelphia, you know, attorneys don't know people. So we have a network of doctors that specialize in workman's comp and personal injury and motor vehicle who know how to treat clients. Because one of the things you said was very true was a lot of the family doctors don't know how to treat an accident case. They're not physical, you know, PM&R doctors, physical medicine. They're not, a lot of them aren't chiropractors. A lot of them don't deal with that. So what happens is you'll have somebody that is a traditional family practitioner that you know, might triage, might send you for x-rays, but they really don't do a workup on the case. So what a lot of attorneys, you know, that are knowledgeable, realize they have to get to somebody who understands the space, that knows how to get specific diagnostic tests in certain timelines.
Well, talk about the importance of all that, and then you need a doctor who's willing to testify, because if they're willing to treat, okay, but not willing to go, you know, testify to the injuries, you got a problem, right? Because the insurance companies have their doctors who, by the way, often you know, meet with the patient for what, 15 minutes, and probably aren't nice to them even during that time, praying that they're late so they don't have to treat them. But what are you looking for, Andrew, and then I'll go to Val, when it comes to a medical provider, and what's the importance of the credibility of that individual, and the fact that in many cases there may be, you know, ebbs and flows in this case, one of those ebbs and flows, and in your world, Val, it could be a year or two before they actually get through the case. But, you know, when it comes to, if somebody's coming into your office, Andrew, and it's a work comp case, and they try to navigate it on their own, and now they've got a claim petition there, and now they walk in and you had to fight for that. Fact of the matter is that the doctor may not get paid for a while. So what are you looking for in a provider that, you know, that is needed, and what, you know, when it comes to a work comp situation?
Sure. So I definitely noticed over the years there are physicians who know medicine very well, and there are physicians who know medicine well and can speak about the medicine very well. It's all about tying in the diagnostic testing to their complaints, to the mechanism of injury. And if you have someone who has decent reports but can't explain to a judge, you know, providing a causation opinion as to how X caused Y, it's going to make it very difficult. And just piggybacking off of a few things that others said, you know, that gap in care, or you go to your primary care doctor early on who's not used to treating a work injury or MVA and they're not documenting things properly, a judge or a jury, I mean, we're talking about human beings. If it's not documented or there's a 6-8 month gap in care, one's going to assume, you know, the person's fine at that time.
Interesting. How important is compliance and keeping
critical.
In touch with the attorney?
It's amazing. Valerie said something. There are times when clients just don't show up for treatment, or they don't show up for extended periods of time. So what happens is when you have to go to court, you know, it's easy for defense to pick it apart because they're like, well, if you're that injured, how come you didn't treat for a month during the middle of this? So so a lot of the communication we do with attorneys as liaisons is we give them an update on a regular basis if people are treating or not. Now most times they treat, you know, according to whatever the treatment plan is, and that's not an issue. But it happens where you get a decent amount of people who just don't show up. And as Valerie said, they're not sophisticated, so they don't know to ask if the doctor's office has transportation, which an awful lot of them do, where they'll help you with, you know, with getting you, you know, an Uber. So a lot of them don't ask. They don't know to ask. They're not sophisticated.
Not to mention, it's probably a new situation. Val, in your world, okay, we're talking about testifying when it comes to work comp, but in your world, you're talking about experts, okay? The credibility, okay? How important is that you have, obviously, a quality physician who's not only treating and helping the person get better, but if need be, and they have to test, they have to be, you know, they got to be credible, and they got to have some credentials.
I do agree with that. They have to have credentials. I also think that it really does fall back on the client. I try to communicate with the clients the importance. I never give them medical advice. I just give them medical legal advice. I tell them that, you know, when you pursue a case and you're injured, you need documentation. Judges look at that. Juries look at that. Insurance people look at that. Mediators look at that. And the doctors, you know, if you don't have one. And just to go back to the primary care physician, some of the doctors with insurance issues, they point blank just don't want to get involved. And the clients really don't know what to do next. So I give them an option of doctors where they live. Because the other thing is, some of these clients that we're dealing with, they're like the eggshell plaintiff. They have a slew of priors. So the doctors that we want to get them to, we want credible doctors that can, for us, it's like relating the pain. Because there's different variations of the organic basis of pain. You could have pain for accidents before and, you know, prior conditions, and then they get in an accident. So you want to be able to go to a doctor that understands how medical legal works, honest doctors with honest clients, but that can show the change in treatment and the different intensity levels. So it's very important that the clients, that the lawyers are able to get the clients to good doctors, credible, ethical doctors.
And you mentioned something there, and workers' compensation, how many times in your life have you heard pre-existing injuries? So I wonder a little bit, you know, so I put together an interview called The Consequences, okay, of trying to do it yourself. I didn't put it together so that I could scare listeners, okay? I put it together because I was in the middle of a conversation, I think with Sam or Jerry, and, you know, one of the things that you could probably talk to everybody here, has any ever human being, this isn't ever been able to navigate that situation, in the face of an absolute pushdown. So why do people, why is it even ethical? Why isn't it malpractice for a doctor to sit there and say, and an insurance company to sit there and say, workers' comp provider, to say it's a pre-existing condition. You know, we're not going to cover it. You know, you were fine for the last 15 years, okay? What does that mean? What does that mean? Pre-existing, is that just a smokescreen?
So in the workers' comp world, that is used very often. In fact, every independent medical exam report I read is typically, yeah, they had a sprain, but what they're suffering from now is due to their pre-existing arthritis that had nothing to do with this work injury. Even though, like you said, they were working full duty, no restrictions for decades leading up to the incident. The good thing about Pennsylvania workers' comp is that an aggravation of any type of underlying condition, and a lot of times an MRI is going to pick up something that clearly was pre-existing but never caused pain to that person before. And then a traumatic incident happens, and now that same finding that was there before is now causing pain. And that is equally as strong as having a brand new injury specifically caused by the event itself.
And in personal injury, Val, does that come up?
All the time. Same exact.
The same strategies and tactics that, you know, saying that, okay, this is, you know, this happened, this is not related to the accident.
All the time.
And that's where the credibility of the medical provider. One of the things I'd like to talk about is the resources that a firm has, the importance. When a listener's looking for a firm, okay? One of the things a regular person may not know is you need to have a firm that can fight the good fight with the insurance company. Okay, which means that, you know, you're not going to settle just at the first, you know, you're not going to sit there and you're not thinking about your bills. You're thinking about their, you know, their situation and what it's going to, how important is, and that comes in the play when, especially in when it comes to PI, when, you know, you're talking about experts, correct? You know, and not, you know, making sure that you have the proper situation for somebody, you know, the proper resources for your client. Talk about that and necessity for a firm to be able to go the distance if they have to.
In terms of getting them to the right doctors?
And experts to bring in expert witnesses for, you know, for your case, because you know that the insurance company is going to have
them. So I think the most important thing in my job is getting the client, no matter what the issues are, is getting the client to the right doctors. A doctor that knows how to get them to specialists, if it's an orthopedic issue, if it's a spinal issue, if it's a neurological issue, and the workup. And it goes back to what you're asking. So a good lawyer and a good firm is going to be able to know that, because if somebody came in with a traumatic brain injury, I'm going to get them to ideally a neurologist right away, or another doctor that can get them to a neurologist very quickly, especially with traumatic brain injuries. It's very important. But almost every injury, it's very important to get them to the right doctors.
Absolutely. I'll talk about that.
You know, I also want to touch on something that we really haven't spoken about. It talks about compensation for the doctors, because a lot of doctors have to wait for a big portion of their money. You know, specifically if it's an auto accident, or if it's a contested case, like a workman's comp case. So a lot of times, some of these physicians have to wait quite some time. So not everybody is equipped, or their business model isn't prepared to handle a med legal type of case. Because so many of these physicians are the type of physicians that deal with Medicaid, Medicare, traditional insurances, where within 30 days they receive the money that they billed for. So there's also a completely different type of business model that a lot of these, you know, doctors are willing to accept.
Well,
you know?
It takes me back a little bit when you say that, because I'd like to talk about the contingency fee agreement, okay, which we call the great equalizer, right? Somebody gets injured. I can only imagine how many times people have walked into both your offices or called you on the phone. How much is this going to cost me? I can't afford it. Okay, which is a catch-22, right? I mean, and the same with the doctors. You just said it. You know, they may not. You know, they may not get paid right away. What is the contingency fee agreement, if you would, Andrew?
So, in workers' comp, and it's pretty standard through the industry, and it's capped at this by law, is 20% of any benefit we're able to get them. A little bit different than personal injury, where it's a one-time trial or settlement. You know, if we go the distance in an initial workers' comp claim, you know, they're going to get the back pay, but the claim's not over and done with. That claim may remain open for the next several years until it ultimately gets settled. So we're able to provide our services. It's 20% of any benefits we help them get. One of the things I want to touch upon with what Larry was saying, how these medical providers in comp, they wait sometimes a year and a half before they finally get payment. The insurance carriers, they try and get out of this all the time. The act specifically says that any past due benefits should be paid with 10% interest. And I can't tell you how many times these medical providers are not getting the additional 10% on their bills after getting a favorable decision and waiting that entire year. Mm-hmm. And then last thought on something that you said in terms of, you know, what are you looking for in a firm? I think with the effect of the pandemic and how it's sort of changed the landscape of law firms, and from a financial standpoint specifically, you need to make sure you're at a place that they're not second-guessing spending money on your case and putting forward the best case possible, because they're thinking, oh, my God, I might not be able to afford the next case, or I might not be able to put forward the best case, you know, tomorrow. So that is beyond important.
When you think about the culture of the firm, what expectations, intake, okay, is so vital. I've seen a lot of firms spend money on marketing and then have a crappy intake Okay, in other words, talk about the importance. You know, like any business, for example, the face of the place is usually the person answering the phone, okay? Whether it's one person or 20, the fact of the matter is that person answering that call, okay, is incredibly important. And the convenience. I've heard one particular attorney I had on this show not long ago told me 5 minutes is the turnaround time, you know, for, in other words, or they're going to go to somewhere, go somewhere else. Talk about expectations and the importance of being able to accommodate clients, okay, 24/7.
For me, a little different than the Pond and Lahaki, which I have a great deal of respect for. They're a huge firm. Spivak and Spivak is a much more of a boutique firm. We've been two generations and we do a lot of work, but we can really personalize. Like when the calls come in, I'm getting the calls. So I get every single call that comes in. So when the clients are calling, they're actually getting an attorney, whether it's midnight, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So I'm the first impression, or my colleague Juan Rodriguez, or my boss Ken Spivak. So they're not getting shoved off to a paralegal or receptionist or some, you know, we have an answering service 24/7, but that answering service gets it right to us. Now, it's not perfect. Sometimes you're not there. You got to call back. But they initially get me and I do the screening or another attorney. And then if we have to do the whole intake, somebody does that intake. But it's very important because there's a lot of competition out there. And if they don't like the first impression, I assure you, they're going to go and they're going to go through all the other firms, the bigger firms, the smaller firms. So I think it's very important to connect right away. I try to connect with the people immediately the second that they call.
Andrew?
Agreed. I mean, if someone calls in and they had a recent injury and they're looking for a consultation, we try and get them to speak with an attorney that day.
And people are typically in a panic, but you're right about that. Like they're going, you know, through the yellow pages, or there are no yellow pages anymore. Am I dating myself?
It's digital yellow pages now, brother.
Thank you. But you know that's incredibly important. One of the things we talk about communications, and by the way, Larry, when it comes to medical providers, it's you know that's got to be a premium as well, because you know
it's interesting. What happens a lot is. We deal with a huge amount of different law firms and individual attorneys, and you have some firms or attorneys that will send a simple text message to me or a simple email with the person's zip code, phone number, and name, and just MVA. And our intake is the one that is actually calling and helping create some of the information. You know, and helping not only the firms but also the doctors that we, you know, set up with. So, and then you have firms, you know, like both of these firms that are, I mean, are really on point, and they send a packet over with all the information. So piecemealing and becoming a detective to some point is really what the intake team does on our end. That's really important because. You know, a lot of people don't realize.
Well, you know what's interesting? Communications. We got about 2 minutes left, but communications, that's the one thing people are always talking about, lawyers and doctors. I can't get in touch. Well, the great firms and, you know, and it was boutique, big firms, you know, medical practices, communications at a premium. But talk about, if you would, just 30 seconds around how important it is for the professionals, especially when if there's a case between the two of your firms and you're doing the medical, the importance of communication between the professionals, because there's a lot of anxiety, you know, around the table, but also with that you know, injured person who's sitting there going, you know, are you guys talking to one another? I mean, is that, you know, that's got to be as critical as anything, because the case is what you're both doing impacts a case.
Sure. So, sorry. a lot of times, you know, one of us has to coordinate the medical care. So we're definitely in constant communication about getting them to a certain type of doctor and getting the medical care coordinated. And a lot of times the third party attorney or the doctor might get new information that I never even knew of.
Val?
Very important to just stay in communication. It's, you know, we try to give the doctors as much subpoenaed records in third party. We get a lot of subpoenaed records. When they're doing the expert reports, I just make sure that my doctors, with a letter, has everything for them to review to prep for trial.
Okay, around the horn. Val, contact information. Somebody wants to get in touch with you?
Spivak and Spivak, Valerie Petticone, 1528 Walnut Street. We're conveniently located.
What's the website? You know,
www.spivakandspivak.com.
Awesome. Andrew?
Pondley Hockey, 215-568-7500. We're on the corner of 20th and Market Street. That's our main office in Center City.
PondleyHockey.com.
That's right.
Larry Schreiber?
BridgeMedLegal.com, 609-332-0428.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for being on the broadcast. Andrew Reuter, of course, Valerie Petticone, great to have you back. And
thank
Larry
you.
Schreiber for making it happen. Tyler in the producer's room. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. And of course, we want to thank BridgeMed Legal for making it happen. I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day, everybody.